Hello, folk of the Blue Mountains, and welcome to The Table, the two-hour art program that we run here on Radio Blue Mountains, 89.1 FM. The program's called The Table, but it consists of the first hour, which is talking arts, an interview program all about the arts and culture, and then we do Blue Mountains Live, which is the live gig and event guide for the entire Blue Mountains region. Tonight we've got two interviews for Talking Arts, so that's good. And the first one is with Nicola Scott, who's a comic book artist who works to American companies, works in particular to DC Comics. So she's drawing Wonder Woman and Superman and Batman. But she lives in Winnie Falls and has a nice house down there, and it's all very very comfortable and remote. She just does her drawings and inkings, and then sends them digitally off to the States, and they send back money and more art boards. So it's all very lovely, and we'll talk to Nicola about her career, and she's also here to tell us about an upcoming book fair down at Glenbrook. So stay tuned for that, and then after that, a bit of Susie and the Banshees, and then we talk to Pam Welsh, who's in the series that we've been doing about artists who are exhibiting at Hands on Clay 2024, the fourth version thereof. And Pam is a ceramicist who, like Melissa Kelly, who we talked to last week, works mainly in figurative work. So another great interview for Hands on Clay, Gang Gang Gallery. And that's an exhibition that's going to be all through April. So start on March 28th and goes right through to April 28th. So stay tuned, and we'll have a few promos, and then we'll get underway with Talking Arts here on Radio Blue Mountains, 89.1 FM.
This is Talking Arts, our weekly focus on a wide array of art forms, hosted by the professor every Thursday from 6.
Going too fast and not paying attention to your surroundings is dangerous for everyone on our roads. So when it comes to roadworks, if you're going over the speed limit, you put the road workers who are making our roads safer at risk. So take care around roadworks in New South Wales. Slow down. Roadworkers around.
Hello and welcome to Talking Arts. Now, this week on Talking Arts, the first half of the GBM Can Arts program here on Radio Blue Mountains, 89.1 FM, we've got a very special guest, and that's a lady who has been in my vision, in my wheelhouse for a while, but I'd never actually gone in depth to connect with her or further investigate the fact that she is an Australian comic book artist who lives in the Blue Mountains. She lives in Winnie Falls. So welcome to the show, Nicola.
Hey, Brad. Thanks for having me.
And now Nicola's here because she's got an alternative motive to being on the show, and that's to promote a book fair coming up in Glenbrook. So we'll get to that, but what we will of course do, Nicola, is that we'll get a background as to who is Nicola Scott, where she comes from, and how she came to end up living in Wentworth Falls, but still working as an American comic book artist, I suppose.
Yeah,
brilliant. So born in Australia, Nicola?
That's right. Yes. In Sydney.
Yeah, so in whereabouts in Sydney?
I was born at, near Paddington. Not the Paddington Women's Hospital, but just near there. We were living in Underwood Street at the time.
All right.
But I grew up in Waverley.
All right. Oh, brilliant. Okay. Yeah, after I left, moved out, I lived in Bronte and Randwick for a long time. So.
Yeah, beautiful areas in the 70s and the 80s.
Yeah. And so we will investigate the sort of the art sources. Where did you first sort of come into contact with art and drawing, etc.?
Art in general, the culture of it was just in my household. My mum was an artist and my grandmother was an artist. So there was a lot of art talk, a lot of art items, you know, and a lot of art making the entire time I was growing up. So my sisters and I were all given sort of various materials to play with. And I just kind of took to them a little more than my other sisters do, who are sort of musicians and graphic designers.
Right.
But I sort of was into the illustration, and I'm a little younger than my sisters, so that when Mum was going off to like life drawing classes in the 70s, instead of leaving me at the hands of my elder sister, she'd take me along.
Right.
And so I was sort of going to life drawing classes from the age of four. Not that necessarily drawing the models, but I was certainly putting like go-go boots and big hair on Mum's beautiful naked ladies.
Right. Okay, and, sorry, drawing them, but adding those elements.
Well, Mum would draw them and I would scribble over them, adding bits and pieces.
Oh, right, I bet she loved that.
Yeah. Okay. Eventually, yeah, she told me to knock it off by giving me my own paper and charcoal and telling me to draw the model. So
right.
That sort of got me into it pretty early.
So we haven't really let people know what it is you do currently. So currently you're a comic book artist. You draw and ink your own books. You're doing it for an American company. You're doing it for DC Comics now.
Yeah, that's right. Well, mostly. Like I've just sort of started back up on my creator-owned project, Black Magic.
Right.
Which I do with a writer called Greg Rucker. But for the most part of the last 20 years, I've been working... for over 20 years, I've been working in the American industry, and for most of the last 20, I've been doing superheroes at DC Comics.
Right, right. Okay, but going back to the beginnings, so you were drawing over your mother's illustrations. So when did you actually start sort of thinking, oh, this might be a thing? Did you do art training at all?
Not really. Like, Mum taught me a lot. She sort of was she was my education. Every school holiday, we'd sit down for a week and she'd sort of teach me about perspective, or she'd teach me about color theory, or she'd teach me, you know, whatever it was. But she would be teaching me long before I was learning anything in school. So by the time, you know, we were learning about these aspects in high school, I already was pretty experienced and had trained my eye for it.
Right, right.
But when it came to comics, that was a really late decision. I was in my late 20s when it occurred to me that I might do this. But it didn't mean that I hadn't spent my entire life drawing superheroes. And that was just because in the 70s there was loads of superheroes on TV and in film, with the Batman reruns and the Superman films. But most importantly, the Wonder Woman TV show.
Right.
And she was my first superhero, and I just sort of never grew out of it. It hit me with such an impact at like age five or whatever I was.
Well, I mean, they even had, because it was an adaption from a comic, they even had comic panels as interstitials. You know, they'd have the beginning of each chapter or whatever.
The opening credits, animation.
There'd be panels, and there'd be little graphic. Tweens between the different scenes and things like that.
That's right.
So obviously. So that was probably a later question I was going to ask, but I'll ask you now, Linda Carter or Gal Gadot?
Oh, Linda Carter, always.
Obviously, yeah.
I think Gal did a brilliant job. You know, it's a hard role to sort of actually get the tone right.
Right.
Despite, you know, you thinking it being probably pretty simple, getting the tone of it right, a lot of comic writers and a lot of comic artists don't. So seeing Hollywood actually get it right twice is a miracle.
So as people are probably starting to discern, you're a bit of a Wonder Woman aficionado, as well as being someone who's worked on Wonder Woman comics. So that obviously influences a lot of your work. Do you now you worked on the the special, the Wonder Woman special that they had a couple of years ago, the special book.
Which one, Historia?
Yeah, Historia, I'm referring to.
Historia is essentially the history of the Amazon, which has been told in the comics before, but it's only ever been very abbreviated to get to Wonder Woman as quickly as possible.
Right.
But this was sort of like a giant addition that only ends with the birth of Diana right at the end.
So right.
It's a full sort of telling of the gods and their creation of the Amazons and the Amazon's plight on Earth.
Now, if people are now rushing to look at your work, I would suggest look at the Wonder Woman work, look at the Teen Titans work, and then also go and look at Black Magic. So,
thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Black Magic, it's not really a superhero book, but
not at all.
There's still visually that sort of impact. I would suggest that people who appreciate, you know, superhero comics and things.
It's a black and white book that I paint about a witch who.
This is what I was going to ask about. Yeah. Is that there are other disciplines there. A lot of the time, you'll only even outline the figures in the panels, and then everything else is like very painterly. It's very watercolor or painterly. And that's where I'm curious to find out if that is still all self-taught or you've ever done any painting training or anything like that.
My painting training came from my mother. I like when I left high school, I went to a performing arts high school.
Right.
And I left pursuing an acting career, and that's where my training was.
Right.
I did do some fashion design training for a little while just because I was interested in garment making.
Right.
I wasn't really interested in fashion, but I did like to make my own clothes.
Yeah, well, I was going to mention, I mean, some of the costuming in some of the books is brilliant, you know.
It's pretty elaborate. Yeah.
And a lot of detail, you know, as to, oh, she's done a certain thing there with the strap on the handbag. That's really interesting, you know.
Right.
Sort of this action going on in the
detail.
Yeah, well, that's it. There's action going on in the panel, and I say, oh, that's I really like the clip on that bag, you know. So you've obviously got those sort of, you know, things still sitting around in your brain somewhere. Did you ever work in costume design for like TV or film or anything like that?
Not specifically like career wise for TV or film, but as an actor. In sort of small productions, you find yourself wearing very many hats. And
right.
As the artistic person, I was often finding myself making sets or making costumes or being in charge of production design or costume design or both.
Right.
For both film and stage.
Right. Yes, I had a very similar sort of path, except mine sort of leaned into set design and prop design and standby props and things like that. But it's still the same sort of approach. You're still drawing stuff. I used to at the same time do storyboards, and
yeah, I've done storyboards too.
Yeah, well, there you are. And I would, well, obviously, it's an easy cross to go from doing illustrated comics to get, if you're working in film and television, to go, oh yeah, I can do the storyboards. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And then you take him to the director instead of stick figures. He's getting this, you know, 42 panel comic book, and they're always very pleased with that.
You bet.
Yeah. I remember doing a natural gas commercial and also doing storyboards for a short film for someone at Afters. And, of course, they come back with the early shots and you think that looks exactly like the panel I drew, you know. To the point where with the natural gas one, I was working at the ABC hiring out furniture and props at the time. And they came in with my storyboards, and said,
"Amazing!"
And of course, the weird thing at the time was I'd referenced some of the furniture in the furniture store when I was drawing the board.
So you could hand them over.
I just point and say, "Well, there it is, there." And you know, they go, "Oh God, it looks exactly the same." So that was when I was reading through. So somewhere it mentioned that you might have done some costume design. So I thought, if she ever came into the costume department, because I was in charge overall of the costume department at the ABC at the time.
Right.
So
I don't know that I did actually, but I did go into some costume departments.
Yeah.
Mainly at the opera.
All right. Yeah, which was huge.
It was very fun to play there.
Yeah, very much so. Okay, so transfer to more modern times. And of course, you had to work through the pandemic. Now, we talked about this yesterday. That the pandemic was obviously a stumbling block, but not huge for someone who works at home and remotely sends their stuff off to other people.
Yeah, I was kind of, you know, really conditioned for that kind of living because, you know, I work from home, I live at home. My home office is already set up and I'm so used to just the process of digitally sending work in that there was very little in the way of a speed bump.
And so during the pandemic, what books were you working on then?
I think I did a bunch of Batman stories. I did an arc of Black Magic, and then I started on this Wonder Woman Historia, History of the Amazon, volume.
Right.
Which we just got nominated for a Hugo.
Oh,
which is very exciting.
Yeah, that's very exciting. Very exciting indeed. So, would you go over for that ceremony if you won? That's you and Greg,
well,
is it?
No, that's me and Kelly Sue and Jean Haar and Phil Jimenez, who are the artists on the other volume.
All right.
I don't know that I will. It's a really long way to go for a maybe. it's in Glasgow this year.
Oh, okay.
Apparently next year it's going to be in Seattle and almost everyone lives in Portland. So
right.
That's not such a big stretch for them. But that's next year.
Right.
I don't know that I'm getting over to Glasgow this year. It would be fun to go, but too much international travel is one of the things that sort of can really impede the workflow.
No, of course. I mean, it would be a chunk of time out of your working year, I suppose.
And this is a very time-consuming job.
Right. Okay, so what I obviously have forgotten to do as we go along is do the housekeeping, which is...
Sure.
Is that you've come along to promote something where people can actually come and see some of your work.
Right.
And that's the book fair, the Blue Mounts Treasures book fair. At Glenbrook. So it's just the one venue, it's just the Blue Dragon.
Yeah, it's happening at the Glenbrook Hall.
Oh, right, that's right.
On the highway, on Saturday the 27th and Sunday the 28th of April.
Right.
I'll be there. Andrew Constant, who is also a comics writer, he's done work for DC and he's been the primary writer on The Phantom for the last 6 years.
Oh, yes.
He'll be there, as well as a number of sort of the local bookstores with their interesting book fair items.
Right. Okay, great. So, I was going to say, what sort of things are you going to be showing there at the
I will have maybe some copies of some books. I'll have some art to look at, like some original art as well as some art prints for sale. And I'm seeing what else I've got because I do have some sort of Black Magic merch about. But mostly it'll be comics and art prints and some original art.
Right. And what other things are going to be at the fair, just so people... No, there's going to be, I suppose there's obviously there's, fine press and books and there's also ephemera. I noticed looking at the poster.
Yeah, well, as someone who's not organising it, I don't know the final listings of the people who will be showing there. But it's a lot of nerd culture stuff because a lot of the bookstores that are participating have sort of pretty rich genre sections,
right?
In terms of sort of like sci-fi and fantasy, and you know, special editions and first editions. There's some really sort of interesting treasures, essentially, at the store.
Good, and that's the thing for people to remember is it's if they look up Blue Mountains Treasures, do the Google on that, or go to Facebook and do Blue Mountains Treasures. They'll be able to go to the Facebook page and they'll see the promotion for the fair and what Blue Mounts Treasures is all about. Brilliant, excellent, and they can see Nicola there and get some bits of her stuff. I was going to ask you.
Come by and say hi.
I was going to ask you. I'm probably revealing something here, but you are supplied with your source material, the things you draw on and paint on and things like that.
Oh, so my artboard.
Artboard, which is brilliant.
I supply the rest of my own art material because, you know, everyone's very particular about what they want to work on.
But it does.
But when it comes to sort of working on superhero books for DC, they just provide you with the artboard,
which is brilliant. But we were thinking yesterday. I was looking through your comics, and my son was as well, and we were thinking, right, so okay, so for every page here, she's got an art board and she's got to work on it and blah blah blah, and then she scans it and sends it off. But of course, that's a lot of art board.
It's a lot of art board. Drawing it all is a lot.
That's what we wondered. And I said, well, maybe she manages to sell all of it instantly. And
no, it's like some of it I know I'm going to sell as I'm drawing it. I just know that it will, as soon as I announce that it's available.
One of my questions, because yeah, you can. Hopefully you're drawing for the story, Nicola, and not to think, oh, this is going to be a really good seller, this board.
No, I always draw for the story. Like, this is why a lot of writers like working with me, because right. I'm not really into just doing flash for my own amusement.
Yeah, and not
what I get out of it, especially as an actor and as a sort of, you know, stage trained person. I really love the storytelling. That to me is way more interesting than a sort of flashy punch page.
And the timing and the panel to panel, how the story transfers and things like
that. Yeah, the sort of really nuanced emotional stuff. That's kind of my signature, you know, the thing that writers come to me for.
But you also get an idea of pacing that a film director would get, you know.
So, you bet.
Yeah, very much so. Have you ever thought of doing any like filming, you know, doing film work and trying to do the same thing, apply the same disciplines?
Yeah, having been in this business for such a long time, I have a lot of sort of film and TV contacts because of what I used to be doing in the 90s.
Yeah.
Just recently I found myself sort of being a little more involved with the film and TV world. And one producer said to me, having sort of had a pretty long conversation, where she got a decent understanding of what it is that I do, she was like, oh, you sound like a director. It sounds like you need to be a director. And I'm like, oh, okay. Hadn't thought about that. But a lot of the same skills.
Give me a script and a pile of money and I will.
Yeah, let's go.
That's it. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Nicola, on the show.
Thank you for having me.
And talking to us. And we hope to... Hope everybody goes down to the fair, the Mountains Treasures Fair, and get to meet you in person and see some of the work.
That would be lovely.
And I'm hoping that you might join us with the art trail and maybe appear somewhere, if not
we'll see.
In your own home studio. But I think people would be keen to come down and see the place where you work.
I'm sure.
And
how
you produce stuff. Excellent. All right. Now, the last thing I'll do is for every person I interview on this program or Blue Mountains Live, I always ask for a music reference so we can play some music as we go out. Do you listen to music in the studio as you're working?
I do. I listen to everything. I listen to podcasts. I listen to audiobooks. I listen to music.
Right.
I've got to keep myself entertained because I'm sitting here for hours and hours, 7 days a week.
Of course. And, I mean, noise in the background can be a thing that just keeps your mind focused on what you're doing, but
yeah,
it can also be inspirational. So I very often, if I'm drawing and all of a sudden I put on a Pink Floyd that has a nice atmospheric thing and brings up images, of course that'll go into the work, you know.
Yeah, so, I get that.
So that's that we need you to pick an artist or
After a few years hiatus, I'm currently back on Black Magic. And so one of my go-tos would be Susie and the Banshees.
Oh, brilliant. Okay.
Cities and Dust will do nicely.
Sorry, which one?
Cities and Dust.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah, brilliant. Okay. And of course, Susie's a very sort of visual and graphic sort of thing, I imagine.
Yeah, you bet.
I imagine, you know, I could ask you to draw a comic about Happy House or any of their songs.
Oh, yeah, there's some great graphics in
there. There'd be like doing the same for The Cure or someone like that. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, once again, thank you so much, Nicola, for coming on the show.
And, that's Bruce Brad. Thanks for having me.
And, yeah, and we hope to see you down at Glenbrook.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. And so here's Susie and the Banshees with Cities in Dust.
Talking Arts, our weekly focus on a wide array of art forms, hosted by the Professor every Thursday from 6.
G'day, I'm Ned, and I've been a road worker for over 12 years. Every day when I'm on the worksite, I see drivers who are going too fast and not paying attention to their surroundings. They're making the roads dangerous for everyone, including us. So when you're driving through roadworks, always slow down and keep us road workers safe. Slow down, roadworkers around.
Are you struggling to save for your first home deposit? If you don't want to wait years to buy a home, Afford Assist can offer 1% deposit home loan. Its innovative deferred deposit solution makes it possible to secure a loan. Buy with an initial part deposit, defer and pay the balance of the deposit without interest. A home loan with an Afford Assist deferred deposit can reduce mortgage stress by reducing the loan amount and thousands on interest payments. Call Anthony on 1-800-961-108 or visit affordassist.com and let us assist you to buy your first home.
Experience Nocturnal at Scenic World these school holidays. As the sun sets, jump aboard the world's steepest train to explore the Lunar Light Journey. Along the rainforest boardwalk, you'll find illuminated native creatures and magical light installations. Take a quest to unlock the Gundungurra creation story. Then float amongst the stars on the Skyway cable car and finish with marshmallows toasted on an open fire. Nocturnal at Scenic World, after dark from April 5 to May 4. Book now at scenicworld.com.au.
Attention all adventurers in the greater Blue Mountains region. Get ready to explore like never before with the Ask Roz Tourism Show, your ultimate guide to the wonders of the Blue Mountains. Join host Robin Catchy Catch Love as she uncovers hidden gems, shares insider tips, and has interviews with local services and businesses that will enrich your visit. Reaching over 1 million people every month, the Ask Roz digital platform is where the adventure starts. Tune in to Radio Blue Mountains 89.1 FM every Friday at 9 a.m. and let the journey begin.
Hello and welcome back to Talking Arts here on the GBM Can Arts program, The Table, on Radio Blue Mountains 89.1 FM. Now, we just heard from Nicola Scott, who's a comic book artist here in the Blue Mountains, lives in Winnie Falls. That was very exciting and fascinating, especially for me since I dabble a bit in comic art. But I've also been doing a series of interviews with people who are exhibiting at Gang Gang Gallery in Lithgow. And so next on my list is Pamela Welsh. Welcome to the show, Pamela.
Hi, how are you?
Not too bad, not too bad. Now, obviously, you went down to the opening on Saturday, yeah?
Yes, I did, yes.
And so the first thing I'll do is ask you, because people have been listening to the program and they may not have been able to get down, how did it all go?
Really well, like really well. In a lot of ways, especially for me, I actually don't know if I've sold anything, but
right.
Loads of people came past. They were fascinated by the story, by the figures, by the detail, by her pretty little face, you know, and the Lord Mayor of Lithgow loved them and got her photos taken.
Oh, wow. Well, there you are. Pleased. There you are. There's the stamp of approval.
Yes, indeed.
I talked to Pam before we started recording, and I mentioned to her that because I'm an illustrator and do a lot of character work, I tend to lean into figurative work and things like that. So I love your work, Pam.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
And I was quite excited by the fact that there was a lot of that sort of work in the exhibition. Especially, we talked to Melissa Kelly last week, who's leans into Where the Wild Things Are.
Yes.
With her work and a lot of other stuff as well. So you weren't actually next on my list, but I wanted to talk to you because I really like the look of your work. So what we might do is we'll get into a bit of Pam's career and where you came from and how long you've lived in the Blue Mountains, and then we'll move into how you got inspired to do the different stories that you tell with your work, and in particular the princess one.
Yeah. Okay, it's a great story, yeah. Yes. I've been making clay for a long time, but I only fairly recently hit on this princess thing, if you like.
Right. You've been doing mainly figurative work? Been doing...
Yes. I started out wanting, I'm not a potter. I didn't train as a potter. I trained as a painter originally.
Right.
So But I like clay. I just like clay better. It's lovely stuff. So I've got a studio in Mudgee and I work from there.
Are there a lot of ceramicists up around Mudgee? Have you got?
Well, there have been. At the moment, there's a conference on at Gulgong.
Yeah, of course, which is
with ties the international.
In with,
yeah, with the international guys and all that. I can't help myself. I just love play, and I just hit on this lovely story, and I can't stop it.
No, of course. Well, tell us the story then. Give us the background.
I came across it on the ABC, actually. There you go.
We love the ABC.
The lovely ABC. The story about a Princess Alexandra of Bavaria, and this is the true bit.
Right.
Who believed that she had swallowed a grand glass piano. Apparently, during the late 19th century especially, glass obsessions were quite popular.
Right.
A guy.
But sorry, you said she thought she'd swallowed it.
She thought she'd swallowed it.
Well, in one go or in bits or?
Nobody told me that part. She just believed it. They noticed that there was something going on when she couldn't fit through doorways.
Oh, okay. So, yes. So
I don't know if she even knew how she swallowed it. Maybe she just believed it was there. She'd already had some other vaguely obsessive ideas. She always wore white, was very clean, you know, that sort of thing.
But I'm sure if she's a princess of Bavaria, she'd just say to the footman, oh, bring me a piece of the piano every day and
yes,
I'll consume it.
Well, maybe she could. yes, but we didn't find out that part. We only found out that she was struggling with the idea that she'd swallowed.
And what sort of era was this, Pam? What?
This is late 19th century.
Okay.
Apparently glass obsessions were popular. A guy believed he had buttocks made of glass.
Yeah. Well,
and his physician whacked him with a cricket bat and that fixed that.
Yeah, right, okay. He didn't shatter into a million pieces. He just was a bit sore for a week.
Well, it must have been.
Yeah.
Yes, but he was cured. You know, that really...
No, of course.
Disaster. But it's fun. So I took that idea of the piano. If you will have noticed, if you look at the work, you can find the piano shape in it.
I did have a look. Well, you put a few posts up, and so I've been trying to sort of get a handle on it. And I was going to ask you the music question a bit later on, and just say, are you a fan of, you know, piano concertos and things? Because, of course, it's had an influence. But if it's part of the story, that obviously answers the question.
No, it wasn't the music that did it. It was the idea that I could use this piano as a metaphor for all, there's so many, it's wonderful, obsessions and peculiarities and contradictoriness, you know. We're just the most amusing creatures when we actually look at it piece by piece. So I just keep finding them and I think, oh, well, there you go.
Right.
And I use it to produce the work. And then, like you know, this something happens in your head and you just think, oh, I could do that way.
Of course. The story gets away from you and writes itself. Yes, of course.
Yes. So none of the work that I've done is actually true.
No, of course.
But, of course,
if you're talking, you know, storytelling and fables and Bavaria, it's very rich source material to then construct that sort of, you know, that sort of story.
You immediately think of mountains and castles and
that's
princesses.
It becomes very romantic and very,
Yes. So it was a great, even from that point of view, it was a great place to start.
Now, so, I mean, you've taken that, though, and a lot of the work is very detailed, very delicate, very elegant. So I want to ask you about your process. I mean, do you sketch everything first or do you just to the shape of the clay? Or
I have a sketchbook.
Right.
And I think in the sketchbook. So I start thinking about something occurs to me, and I start making little sketches and thinking about what I might be able to do with the clay and what I might not be able to do.
Right.
And I just rattle it around in my head for a while. And then when I get something of fairly concrete, I start on a big sheet of cartridge.
Right.
And I work a drawing there that has the base of the piano shape. So I put a piano shape on and I work off that and produce this drawing, and it's pretty close to the thing I end up with.
No, of course. So are you a 3D visual thinker? Do you think sort of
involved? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. The idea that you couldn't think in volume is beyond me.
I'm a bit the same. My work has always got a lot of perspective and a lot of shading and a lot of volume in it. People generally, will come up to you and say, "How do you do that? How do you not make it look flat?"
Yes.
And you've got to explain to them that sometimes it's just the thickness of a
that actually does it.
You don't have to have a lot of shading or work out the perspective. Sometimes it's just letting off on the line a little bit and making it a bit thinner that gives
That'll drop it back or push it forward with so I do that, and I've even considered recently trying to work back into some paintings to go with them, but I haven't. I'm just leaving that in my head for a little while and think about that.
Right.
And after I do the big drawing, I cut templates and make slabs. Basically, the whole work is made of slabs of clay.
Of layers, yeah.
So I cut a template and I construct something, and then
just
the
to
little,
get, as I said, the volume, to get the basic volume.
Yes. So then it has occurred to me, it saves me, not that I want to do it anyway, but it saves me making a body. I have this shape that I can decorate
with
information, and I don't actually have to make a body. I make hands and arms and heads and legs and, yeah.
But if you're doing that sort of work that relates back to the illustrative, we were talking to Melissa Kelly, and she also worked as a fashion designer and things like that. You don't need to do a really detailed human figure if you're going to put, outfits and dresses and belts and hair and, blah, blah, blah. You can get your basic shape and then start getting into all the fun bits with the hats.
One of the little figures, the little princess on top of the blocks, the chateau blocks.
Right.
She doesn't actually have a body, it's just clothing.
Right.
It looks like she's got a body, but she doesn't.
No, of course. But
she's
because,
not actually in there, but
because
it looks
you're
like
doing,
she has.
Late 1800s, they wore a lot of clothing. So, indeed. You're only going to see
very
face,
convenient.
Face and neck, and that's probably about it.
Brilliant. Yes. And I can use sometimes, anyway, not always, but I can sometimes, if I've got a head that's got masses of hair or something like that, a big crown, something, I can use one of those collars, a really high collar.
Of course.
To help support the head. Little tricks like that do anyway. I'm sure you think of ways around. That's the basic, and then I do little
If you're doing a lot of rough spam, that might be the point where I'd go, hang about. Am I going to sit here and do a rough and do all the detail of the curved fabric, That'd be a lot of work, I would imagine.
Yes. Well, they even now, you've seen the detail.
Yes.
But I can't stop it. I have to have it.
I love it. I love that amount of detail is brilliant, that you've actually gone in there and the observation, of course, of what those things are supposed to. Do you do a lot of research?
Actually quite a bit. I haven't got rabbits in this time. I did one work in the past with rabbits
in
it. And I sort of anthropomorphized the rabbit slightly, but I didn't have a rabbit.
All right.
And I didn't know, I can do horses. I'm used to horses. I had horses.
Right.
But I couldn't do a rabbit.
Yeah, so no, you've got to do that muscle memory thing where you learn.
It just happens. You know it.
Yeah.
So I rented a rabbit.
Oh, brilliant. And nothing better than the actual live thing.
Yes. And so I watched the rabbit and I drew a rabbit. And
was he cooperative? Would he pose?
No, he's a horrible thing. I didn't know rabbits did this. He thumped a lot because he wasn't happy.
Oh, he was a thumper, like in the Disney film.
Well, he was. I don't know if they all are. I don't know. But
yeah, he actually did that. Wasn't. He did that, like the rabbit in Bambi. He would thump.
Yes. Well, maybe all rabbits do it, maybe.
Well, I mean, Disney were famous for observing nature and using those things that they observed. They would do exactly the same thing. They would get a couple of rabbits in and have all the artists sit around and just sit there and watch. Yeah, Walt was big for them. You know,
so. Yeah, so the...
I love that you've done that. That's brilliant.
I've been trying. I'm going to have to go. I want Bilbies at some point.
Say again. You want?
Bilbies.
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 God.
Yep. Yep. I want Bilbies somewhere. Somehow. I've got to get Bilbies. At the moment, I want Bilbies.
Right.
And I haven't. I've tried researching online images, watching videos. It's not enough.
Well, apparently they're hard to capture. I know photographers who've said when they've tried to go and shoot a bilby.
It's really difficult.
It's really hard to get, you know, get close to them. They're very skittish. So.
Yes. Well, but so far nobody will actually let me get very close.
Right.
I can only sit outside and watch them.
Yeah,
but I'm hoping that
I'd go to the wise people, you know, because I imagine there'd be injured bilbies who you could nurse back to health.
Yes, I'm not sure of that. I hadn't considered that one. I only tried zoos.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah. No, I know a fella who looks after reptiles, but he's also an artist. And he draws them, you know, and they just come around and say, "Oh, can you take these three reptiles?" You know, because they were injured. They were, you know, on roads or whatever they were, and he goes, "Yep, sure." Chuck them in the backyard, and then he sits down and draws them as he's nursing them back.
Wow.
I thought that was quite an elegant way of doing it, you know.
Yes.
Rather than trying to get lots of permits and things, which is, you know, people then put you under the microscope to make sure that you're acceptable. You're acceptable and blah, blah, blah. But if you put your hand up and say, oh, look, I'll take care of them if they're injured, you know, they sort of bypass all that because you're obviously a good person because you want to help the animals. So
there you go.
Okay, now what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you about your process because we've been doing that with everybody. Sure. So do you fire stuff at home? Have you got your own kiln?
Yes, got a kiln. It's not a big kiln; it's fairly small.
Right.
That's why I do partly at least the blocky things. Because I can fire things separately and put them together later.
Right.
So I don't need a huge kiln.
Yeah.
I did have in the past, I've had a much bigger thing, but I'm much happier with this, what I'm doing now. I'm just happy with it. It's great.
No, of course.
I've got a studio in the largest room in my old house.
Yeah.
And when I'm working, I've just cleaned up now, when I'm working... The dining room table gets covered with bits and pieces and drawings and sketches and stuff as well.
Are you on your own or are you living with someone?
No, I live by myself
with
the dog.
Well, that makes it a bit easier if you don't have to. Stuff out when you get tired, go to bed, then get up and work again. Yeah,
it doesn't matter. So that's the space. I've got a big backyard. I can sit outside and in nature and just look at things and think things and maybe use something that comes into my head, who knows.
Brilliant.
I've got one with the little goannas on it at the moment.
Oh, okay.
There was a blue tongue in my backyard, so that's how I got that. Those things happen to everybody.
I imagine for doing that sort of delicate work, you must be reasonably practiced now with the kiln and the firing and the types of clay and things like that to be able to make sure that all that detail doesn't fall off and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yes. How can I describe this? I've just learnt over time how to make sure things don't fall off.
Yep.
I've found a clay that is that lovely creamy right. white colour.
Yep, yep.
I've discovered how and not get that, to make that, things fall off.
Do you get that locally, the clay?
No. I used to, but the guy who produced it stopped producing.
Right.
My clay now comes from Melbourne.
Oh, good heavens. Well, this is quite a common thing I'm discovering with a few of the artists in the mountains and out in the Seven Valleys, et cetera.
Yeah.
Is that it's getting harder and harder to get the materials.
To get materials, places are – I suppose it's happening with all kinds of things, but places are starting to close down.
Yeah, well, I mean, COVID obviously had a big effect, lockdown.
I guess,
put a lot of these smaller businesses, smaller supply houses out of business.
Possibly.
And we've actively, with the GBM CAM, with the arts organisations, we're actively trying to look into ways to reconnect people with networks and things like that of being just sources for people who are supplying, and ways to keep it going, because otherwise it's going to have a big effect on people producing art.
Producing any handmade.
Correct.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Because that in turn makes them more expensive.
Of course.
So.
Makes it harder to see, makes it harder to experience. This is probably a good segue to come around to hands-on clay. Sure. So is this your first hands-on clay?
I'm not sure what you mean by that question. Hands-on clay before?
Well, no, the exhibition.
It's the first time I've shown at Gang Gang.
Yeah, okay, great. Because there's been this is the fourth one that you're part of. So they've had three. We talked to Lisa Edwards and Sarah Sullivan who've been in it before. Lisa was in the original.
Back in
22 or whenever it was, 21.
Right.
But, of course, other people, it's the first time they're doing it. So,
yes.
As you said.
Well, it's the first time for me at Gang Gang. Anyway, I had an exhibition. I was really lucky. The local regional gallery opened not so long ago, and straight after COVID, I was offered a show with another guy. He did the big room with big paintings and stuff, and I did the smaller room with my work. But that was wonderful. That was my first state-run funded gallery experience. It was great.
Brilliant. And you had a good reaction, obviously, to that show.
Yes. Yes. Very similar to the people walk up to them. And some, I think they do. Did you identify with in some way with the characters, or did you just find them amusing? I'm not sure what the reaction is, but it's pretty powerful anyway.
No, of course.
When they see them, which is
I think it's a good way to have.
Why wouldn't I?
I think I love a ceramic exhibition where you've got these gorgeous, beautiful bowls and vases and things like that, with interesting glazes and stuff like that. But then when scattered amongst them is some character work, I just go off. I think it's wonderful. So,
It's nice to see this huge variety of clay making.
Of course. And now there's 13 artists in Hands of Clay, Hands on Clay for this one.
Yes.
And are you going to do one of the artist days?
Yes. Oh, you're going to ask me which day and I can't remember.
Well, we've actually, at various points, we put up the dates for everyone. So don't worry too much.
Oh, sure. You. Well,
and
okay.
I'll put a link up again for what day is your day.
Great. Thanks.
But, thank you so much for coming on the show, Pam.
Oh, thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it. I like talking about the princesses.
Of course, of course. Well, it's a story. You get to tell the story over and over again.
Yes,
nice. I think it's really nice for people to have some context when they go in and they'll go, oh, I know all about this. I know why this piano's there and I know where this story has come from. And of course, they'll go off and Google the Princess of Bavaria and they'll walk into the gallery with a bit of...
Well, she's there. They'll find her.
Bit of background. Excellent. Now, I mentioned music before and the pianos in the work. Every interviewee I have, I ask them for a musical reference so we can play some music as we go.
Oh, no, don't ask me that.
Do you listen to music when you're working at all?
I have to tell you this. My musical ear is not good.
No, sure. But, I mean, do you put music on at all when you're working?
Only very occasionally.
Right, okay.
I don't know why this is. Perhaps I'm peculiar. almost all music makes me feel sad.
Oh, okay. Well, how about I try and find
Could you choose? Can you? Choose
I will. I'll
something
go. I'll go and pick a happy
19th century, perhaps happy.
A happy piano concerto. Something
beautiful.
Yeah,
Rites
of Spring or something that uplifts us. You know. So.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Not a problem. As I said, thank you so much for coming on, Pam.
Thank you for having me.
And, I hope the exhibition does well over the month. For people, the exhibition goes to April 28th, and one of those days Pam will be down there. Well, probably it's a weekend, is it? Is it a Saturday or a Sunday? I think we know sort of who's doing the end, so it'll be, I imagine it'll be in the middle somewhere. It might be this weekend or the weekend after possibly. So I'll put the link up, I'll put the date up. And let everybody know and go down and have a chat to Pam about the story behind her work.
Good, thanks. It'll be great to talk to people. I'll enjoy it.
Brilliant. Thanks, Pam.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hand me another beer, okay?
You driving on?
Yeah, but I'll be right.
Hey, no, I'm not sure you should be driving.
Yeah, but I only had a few.
Hey, Unc.
Locals are dying on country roads.
You all right?
Our aunties, our uncles, our cousins, us. The road is no place for excuses. A message from the New South Wales Government.
Blue Mountains Air are friendly, reliable, and local, and Deedon, the owner, is keen to keep your home warm and provide all your air conditioning repairs and replacements. What better incentive to ring him on 0420 704 907 sooner rather than later?